Chapter 41. He was trying to press his watch upon me, and was exposing the paper and explaining it to me, when Adler appeared on the scene, about a dozen yards away. I said to poor Kruger, "Put up your watch, I don't want it. You shan't come to any harm. Go now, I must tell Adler his fortune. Presently I will tell you how to escape the assassin. Meantime I shall have to examine your thumb mark again. Say nothing to Adler about this thing, say nothing to anybody." He went away filled with fright and gratitude. Poor devil. I told Adler a long fortune, purposely so long that I could not finish it. Promised to come to him on guard that night and tell him the really important part of it, the tragical part of it. I said, so must be out of reach of eavesdroppers. They always kept a picket watch outside the town, mere discipline and ceremony, no occasion for it, no enemy around. Toward midnight I set out, equipped with the countersign, and picked my way toward the lonely region where Adler was to keep his watch. It was so dark that I stumbled right on the dim figure, almost before I could get out a protecting word. The sentinel hailed and I answered, both at the same moment. I added, "It's only me, the fortune teller." Then I slipped to the poor devil's side, and without a word I drove my dirk into his heart. "Yowl," laughed I, "it was the tragedy part of his fortune, indeed." As he fell from his horse, he clutched at me, and my blue goggles remained in his hand, and away plunged the beast, dragging him, with his foot in the stirrup. I fled through the woods, and made good my escape, leaving the accusing goggles behind me in that dead man's hand. This was 15 or 16 years ago. Since then I have wandered aimlessly about the earth, sometimes at work, sometimes idle, sometimes with money, sometimes with none, but always tired of life, and wishing it was done, for my mission here was finished, with the act of that night, and the only pleasure, solace, satisfaction I had, in all those tedious years, was in the daily reflection, "I have killed him." 4 years ago, my health began to fail. I had wandered into Munich, in my purposeless way. Being out of money, I sought work, and got it. Did my duty faithfully about a year, and was then given the berth of night watchman yonder in that dead house which you visited lately. The place suited my mood. I liked it. I liked being with the dead, liked being alone with them. I used to wander among those rigid corpses, and peer into their austere faces, by the hour. The later the time, the more impressive it was. I preferred the late time. Sometimes I turned the lights low. This gave perspective, you see, and the imagination could play. Always, the dim receding ranks of the dead inspired one with weird and fascinating fancies. 2 years ago I had been there a year then. I was sitting all alone in the watch room, one gusty winter's night, chilled, numb, comfortless, drowsing gradually into unconsciousness. The sobbing of the wind and the slamming of distant shutters falling fainter and fainter upon my dulling ear each moment, when sharp and suddenly that dead bell rang out a blood-curdling alarm over my head. The shock of it nearly paralyzed me, for it was the first time I had ever heard it. I gathered myself together and flew to the corpse room. About midway down the outside rank, a shrouded figure was sitting upright, wagging its head slowly from one side to the other, a grisly spectacle. Its side was toward me. I hurried to it and peered into its face. Heavens, it was Adler. Can you divine what my first thought was? Put in two words, it was this. "It seems, then, you escaped me once. There will be a different result this time." Evidently this creature was suffering unimaginable terrors. Think what it must have been to wake up in the midst of that voiceless hush, and look out over that grim congregation of the dead. What gratitude shone in his skinny white face, when he saw a living form before him. And how the fervency of this mute gratitude was augmented when his eyes fell upon the life-giving cordials which I carried in my hands. Then imagine the horror which came into his pinched face when I put the cordials behind me and said mockingly, "Speak up, Franz Adler, call upon these dead. Doubtless they will listen and have pity, but here there is none else that will." ... He tried to speak, but that part of the shroud which bound his jaws held firm and would not let him. He tried to lift imploring hands, but they were crossed upon his breast and tied. I said, shout, Franz Adler, make the sleepers in the distant streets hear you and bring help. Shout and lose no time, for there is little to lose. What, you cannot? That is a pity, but it is no matter, it does not always bring help. When you and your cousin murdered a helpless woman and child in a cabin in Arkansas, my wife, it was, and my child. They shrieked for help, you remember, but it did no good. You remember that it did no good, is it not so? Your teeth chatter then, why cannot you shout? Loosen the bandages with your hands, then you can. Ah, I see your hands are tied, they cannot aid you. How strangely things repeat themselves, after long years, for my hands were tied, that night, you remember? Yes, tied much as yours are now, how odd that is. I could not pull free. It did not occur to you to untie me. It does not occur to me to untie you. S.H. There's a late footstep. It is coming this way. Hark, how near it is. One can count the footfalls. 1, 2, 3. There it is just outside. Now is the time. Shout, man, shout. It is the one sole chance between you and eternity. Ah, you see you have delayed too long. It has gone by. There it is dying out. It is gone. Think of it, reflect upon it. You have heard a human footstep for the last time. How curious it must be to listen to so common a sound as that, and know that one will never hear the fellow to it again. ... Oh, my friend, the agony in that shrouded face was ecstasy to see. I thought of a new torture, and applied it, assisting myself with a trifle of lying invention. That poor creature tried to save my wife and child, and I did him a grateful good turn for it when the time came. I persuaded him to rob you, and I and a woman helped him to desert, and got him away in safety. ... A look, as of surprise and triumph, shone out dimly through the anguish in my victim's face. I was disturbed, disquieted. I said, what, then, didn't he escape? ... A negative shake of the head. No? What happened, then? ... The satisfaction in the shrouded face was still plainer. The man tried to mumble out some words, could not succeed. Tried to express something with his obstructed hands, failed. Paused a moment, then feebly tilted his head, in a meaning way, toward the corpse that lay nearest him. Dead? ... I asked. Failed to escape? Caught in the act and shot? ... Negative shake of the head. How, then? ... Again the man tried to do something with his hands. I watched closely, but could not guess the intent. I bent over and watched still more intently. He had twisted a thumb around, and was weakly punching at his breast with it. Ah, stabbed, do you mean? ... Affirmative nod, accompanied by a spectral smile of such peculiar devilishness, that it struck an awakening light through my dull brain, and I cried, did I stab him, mistaking him for you? For that stroke was meant for none but you. ... The affirmative nod of the redying rascal was as joyous as his failing strength was able to put into its expression. Oh, miserable, miserable me, to slaughter the pitying soul that stood a friend to my darlings when they were helpless, and would have saved them if he could. Miserable, oh, miserable, miserable me. ... I fancied I heard the muffled gurgle of a mocking laugh. I took my face out of my hands, and saw my enemy sinking back upon his inclined board. He was a satisfactory long time dying. He had a wonderful vitality, an astonishing constitution. Yes, he was a pleasant long time at it. I got a chair and a newspaper, and sat down by him and read. Occasionally I took a sip of brandy. This was necessary, on account of the cold. But I did it, partly because I saw that along at first, whenever I reached for the bottle, he thought I was going to give him some. I read aloud. Mainly imaginary accounts of people snatched from the grave's threshold, and restored to life and vigor by a few spoonsful of liquor and a warm bath. Yes, he had a long, hard death of it, 3 hours and 6 minutes, from the time he rang his bell. It is believed that in all these 18 years that have elapsed since the institution of the corpse watch, no shrouded occupant of the Bavarian dead houses has ever rung its bell. Well, it is a harmless belief. Let it stand at that. The chill of that death room had penetrated my bones. It revived and fastened upon me the disease which had been afflicting me, but which, up to that night, had been steadily disappearing. That man murdered my wife and my child, and in 3 days hence he will have added me to his list. No matter, God, how delicious the memory of it. I caught him escaping from his grave, and thrust him back into it. After that night, I was confined to my bed for a week, but as soon as I could get about, I went to the dead house books, and got the number of the house which Adler had died in. A wretched lodging house, it was. It was my idea that he would naturally have gotten hold of Kruger's effects, being his cousin, and I wanted to get Kruger's watch, if I could. But while I was sick, Adler's things had been sold and scattered, all except a few old letters, and some odds and ends of no value. However, through those letters, I traced out a son of Kruger's, the only relative left. He is a man of 30 now, a shoemaker by trade, and living at number 14 Knickstrasse, Mannheim, widower, with several small children. Without explaining to him why, I have furnished 2/3 of his support ever since. Now, as to that watch, see how strangely things happen. I traced it around and about Germany for more than a year, at considerable cost in money and vexation, and at last I got it. Got it, and was unspeakably glad. Opened it, and found nothing in it. Why, I might have known that that bit of paper was not going to stay there all this time. Of course I gave up that $10,000 then, gave it up, and dropped it out of my mind. And most sorrowfully, for I had wanted it for Kruger's son. Last night, when I consented at last that I must die, I began to make ready. I proceeded to burn all useless papers, and sure enough, from a batch of Adler's, not previously examined with thoroughness, out dropped that long-desired scrap. I recognized it in a moment. Here it is, I will translate it. Brick livery stable, stone foundation, middle of town, corner of Orleans and Market. Corner toward courthouse. Third stone, fourth row. Stick notice there, saying how many are to come. Apostrophe apostrophe, there, take it, and preserve it. Kruger explained that that stone was removable, and that it was in the north wall of the foundation, fourth row from the top, and third stone from the west. The money is secreted behind it. He said the closing sentence was a blind, to mislead in case the paper should fall into wrong hands. It probably performed that office for Adler. Now I want to beg that, when you make your intended journey down the river, you will hunt out that hidden money, and send it to Adam Kruger, care of the Mannheim address which I have mentioned. It will make a rich man of him, and I shall sleep the sounder in my grave for knowing that I have done what I could for the son of the man who tried to save my wife and child, albeit my hand ignorantly struck him down, whereas the impulse of my heart would have been to shield and serve him. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.